As I mentioned, we're going to jump back into our study. If you want to go ahead and turn in your Bibles, we're going to go to 2 Chronicles tonight. We're going to spend some time in 2 Chronicles. I was thinking about the difference there. Of course, 1 Kings really covers the kings of both the Northern Kingdom and the Southern Kingdom, whereas Chronicles really focuses on the kingdom of Judah and its kings. And so as we discuss tonight, it'll be important for us to measure there. So in our last study, we talked about Jehu. He lived about 843 to 816. And as we mentioned, his reign is a mixed one, as several of the kings in the south he did some really good things, and there were some areas in his life where he fell short. And so during his reign, of course, God used him as his hand of judgment upon Ahaziah, the king of Judah, which left the kingdom in Judah without a ruler. And we'll get more into that in just a minute, but that's when Athaliah appoints herself as queen over the kingdom. We'll look at that in just a minute. And she'll have a short reign of about 6 to 7 years. We'll also talk about Joash, who will be the king who will supplant her. And then we'll get into Jehoaz in Israel. We'll go back and look there. And if we have time, we'll get into another Joash or Jehoash. Those names can be spelled either way in Israel. So this might get a little confusing. Again, please keep those reference sheets there at hand to refer back to them. We'll refer to them tonight, but we'll move forward. We'll have a brief little interlude about the death of Elisha near the end of Joash's reign. And then if we have the time, we'll get into Amaziah in Judah. So that's where we're going to go tonight. If you will, turn to 2 Chronicles 22. And we'll look at Athaliah. And we're going to have to kind of unite 1 Kings 11 and 2 Chronicles 22 to kind of get a real picture of what's going on here. But if you go to 2 Chronicles 22 and verse 9, the text tells us that, talking about Jehu, that he searched for Ahaziah, and he was captured while hiding in Samaria. He was brought to Jehu and put to death. They buried him, for it was said, he is the grandson of Jehoshaphat, who sought the Lord with all his heart. And so they take him back, they bury him, but now the kingdom is in kind of a real turmoil, because there's not a clear succession behind him. Because what did he do after he became king? You remember what he did? He killed all his brothers to secure his own throne. Well, he died, and there really wasn't anyone old enough to take the rule. Now, there was a young man who should have been appointed king, but he was very young, and we'll note him in just a minute. And so this happens. Now you have no king. Athaliah kind of sees an opportunity for herself here. 2 Chronicles 22 and verse 10 says that when she saw what happened, she arose and destroyed all the royal family of the house of Judah. So she's just following in the footsteps of her son. And now, what do we know about Athaliah? Who is she?
The daughter of Jezebel.
What's that now?
Just the daughter of Jezebel.
Daughter of Jezebel. Well, hold on. Let's see here. I'm trying to make sure that's her connection. Yeah, so she was the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. I'm just confirming it in my head there. So you remember the intersection of those two families of the Judah and Israel was through marriage. And so here, just like Jehoshaphat had married a daughter of this family, he was connected to Ahab in that way. Well, so did Hazael. He also had married her as well. And so, Jehoram had married Athaliah, not Ahaziah. But he was their son, Jehoram, and Athaliah's son. He became king, reigned a year. Well, now he's dead. And now you have Athaliah kind of as the matriarch of the family, the one living member there, because remember Jehoram, he's gone, and all the predecessors. And so she sees an opportunity here, kind of in the footsteps of her mother, Jezebel. She's also the granddaughter, and this is the way we'll refer to her, as the granddaughter of Omri. You know, remember, Omri is not very, wasn't a good king either. And so you kind of have this legacy of evil people. Well, she, it's not like she becomes queen and then is all kind and nice. What does she do? She just kills everybody else. She says, I'm going to wipe the board clean. Very akin to Jezebel, right? Very like her. Of course, on her little smiley face here, she doesn't get a smiley face. She gets the red face there and the angry face because she was not good for the kingdom. If we go back to 2 Kings, we're going to spend most of our time in 2 Chronicles, but just for a moment, let's step back. 2 Kings 11, 1 through 3 gives us a little more information. Now, so get this picture in your head. The king is dead. Athaliah sees her opportunity. I'm the matriarch. I can stand here. I can take advantage of the moment. And so she goes through and she wipes out the royal family. Now, were these families small? You remember what Jehu, I mean, he had a lot of work on his hand when he came through and took out the family of Ahab in the north. Well, when you talk about these royal families, they're typically pretty large. And so she goes through and she kills them all except for one young man. The text tells us that Jehosheba, I can't say that word very well, her name very well, but she's the daughter of Joram or Jehoram. So this is the daughter, I don't know if it was her stepdaughter or her biological daughter. We're not told. He had other wives, most likely. And so she could have been the daughter of Athaliah or one of the stepdaughters or one of the, you know, extended family here, however you want to look at this kind of conglomerate. But she sees what's going on. Well, she decides that she needs to save Joash. Now, Joash is the son of Hazael. Was this the grandson of Athaliah? Again, the Bible doesn't really give us enough detail, to my knowledge, to know whether this was her grandson or not. It could have been from another wife of Hazael who was not connected. I guess it would have had to have been, wouldn't it? I'm sorry. Yeah, it would have been her grandson through Hazael. What am I saying? So it was her grandson that she was going to murder. She was going to eliminate. And so Jehosheba decides, I'm not going to let that happen. So she takes the nurse and Joash. She scurries them away and hides them. Now, at the time, he is only about a year old. He is tiny. You know, you think about the brutality of different cultures, you know, what people do. You think about maybe the Egyptians and what the Egyptians did to the Israelites. I mean, it was awful. They were going out murdering newborn infants. You talk about what the followers of Moloch would do when they would send their children into the fires. And we may think, well, they were just kind of the oddity. They were the extreme. But look what's going on even in Judah. I mean, here's a grandmother killing her grandchild because she doesn't want the pressure that he might take over the throne. So you really do have kind of a real brutal climate. And so he gets put in hiding at one. So he's not even old enough to even be at all aware of what's going on. But he gets hidden away. I think it is interesting where they took him. Most likely into the temple and hid him. Maybe a good place for a woman like this to hide him in the temple. It's probably not a place, I don't know that she would venture into a lot. Yes, sir.
I was just thinking, Athaliah, you wonder what her plan was. Because, okay, I'm going to kill the whole royal family if I can, then what happens? What, I mean, obviously I can't live forever. And is the house of Judah just going to go into chaos? Or does she even care?
Well, see, and that's, yeah, I'm not sure she thought very far ahead at all. I mean, think about the kind of mindset it takes to kill your own family and to go through and kill not just the adults. I mean, that's horrible enough. Not even just your own children, but to kill your grandchildren. I mean, any grandparent's going to be like, that's the most awful thing I could ever think. All right? And that's what this lady's going to do. So it really gets you where she is. Now, was Jezebel much different than her?
No,
she wasn't. And so it seems to have been just the culture of that family. They just had very little appreciation for life. And it was all about power and how much power I have over someone else. So they hid him from Athaliah, verse 2, that he was not put to death. And he remained with her 6 years, hidden in where? The house of the Lord. Now that's important, and we'll come back to that in just a minute when we talk about Joash. While Athaliah reigned over the land. So she reigned about 6 years. He was about a year old, and so he will eventually take the throne. He's about 7. And so that's kind of where we see Athaliah. So let's leave Athaliah for a minute. Let's talk about Joash. So he's been hidden away. He's hidden away for 6 years. And as you continue to read, it gets into him. So if you go back to 2 Chronicles, if you'll venture back with me to 2 Chronicles 22, we're going to spend some time there. So Joash, here's this young child. It says in verse 11, Jehoshabeth, and I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that, but she, the daughter of the king, again, this is just a repeat about what happened. So she sees what happened. She goes and hides him away. That's how 2 Chronicles, almost the wording, I think, is verbatim from 1 Kings 11. Go down to verse 4. But in the 7th year, Jehoiada. You may know who Jehoiada is. It's an important guy, especially to Joash. He's going to be super important to Joash's reign. Who's Jehoiada? He's the high priest, right, over the temple. Now, he has had Joash for 6 years. And he's going to have a major influence over him. So just imagine that. I mean, I can imagine I'm sure Joash kind of looks at Jehoiada as his father. Because he's probably been the most prominent male influence in his life. And that'll serve him well for a period of time. Let's see. Da-da-da-da. All right. In the seventh year, Jehoiada sent and brought the captains of the Karaites and of the guards and had them come to him in the house of the Lord. He made a covenant with them and put them under oath in the house of the Lord, and he showed them the king's son. So this had to be a major coup that they undertook, in that they were able to hide this information for 6 years. You ever kept a secret for that long? That's hard. Now, I'm sure we do, but in order to keep a secret like that, how do you do that?
Don't tell anybody.
Okay, well, yeah, that's kind of the obligation. Yes, sir, thank you. But I mean, like, for you to not give it up, why? You try to keep a secret, you sit there and think about it a lot. You know, I wouldn't. I'd store it off. I don't want to talk about it because I don't want anything to slip out. And that's just me holding on to some information. Theirs was even harder. This is a kingdom where you've already seen, there was a HBO show, Game of Thrones or something, right? And it's all about how these families would kill each other and one would try to take over or something like that. Well, this is a Game of Thrones where it is like serious business. When your grandmother will kill you, I mean, who can you trust? And so you imagine what it took for them to keep this secret for 6 years.
Well, if you go by the way that Israelis or people say they did it, all the way for three people to keep a secret, the secret is that two of them were dead. So that sounds like Israel.
Yeah. And It was a secret even from the guards, because he had to bring them in and he showed them the king's son. And so this had to be like an astonishing work, hard work to keep this secret. So as you continue to read in 2 Chronicles 22, what you find out, we won't read all this, but they set up guard patrols. And Jehoiada has them set up where they had a rotating patrol of guards that would watch him on all sides. Because, I mean, you're dealing with a serious lady who, if she were to get wind of this, there's no doubt she would use all the force of her under her power, under, you know, her rule, to kill him. And so, but they're able to do that. Now, what we're not told in the meantime is what Athaliah did as queen. Now we'll notice later on that it must not have been good because of the people's reaction to her, and we'll see that in just a minute. But so just imagine, or keep in mind, that during this 6 years you've got a lady on the throne who is very corrupt, very evil, and she's ruling all this time. And so the years pass. And as you continue to look there in chapter 22, that's what we'll get into as we move forward. So that's the 6 years. We cover that. So when we look at the reign of Joash, you can really break it down into two segments. There is the part of his reign under the tutelage of Jehoiada, the high priest, and then there is his reign afterwards. And they're very distinct in his behavior and what he did in the kingdom. And so as we go through this, we're going to look at it from those with those two different segments in mind. So there is the time period of Jehoiada being high priest, and then there's the time after his death. So while he was high priest, the text tells us that in the seventh year, so now he's about 7 years old, 7, 8, he took, Jehoiada took courage and entered into a covenant with some different individuals. So they're going to they're going to do a coup on Athaliah to give the kingdom to Joash. It says, verse 2, they went about through Judah and gathered the Levites from all the cities of Judah and the heads of the fathers of the house of Israel, and they came to Jerusalem. Why include that? Why do you need to know that detail? Why is that important? What's that? Yeah. But why go gather all these heads of the different cities? What are they doing? It's all political, isn't it? They're going to try to capture support. That's what they're going after. They know they need support of the other top people in the nation. They need that support behind them. And so they gather at Jerusalem. What's significant about Jerusalem? That's the capital, right? And it's also where the temple is. Verse 3, and all assembled made a covenant with the king in the house of God. And Jehoiada said to them, "Behold the king's son. Let him reign as the Lord spoke concerning the sons of David." So he gets them together. They don't, you know, do they even know why they're coming? I mean, you can imagine being there and you've thought, well, she killed the whole house of David. I mean, all the other people. So, I mean, who's left to reign? I bet some other people were thinking that. And then all of a sudden, they bring up this son who no one knew about. And so he proclaims him as king. And Jehoiada the priest gave the captains the spears and the large and small shields that what? Had been King David's. Why? This is all political. Why do that?
Symbolic,
right? It's a reminder of David. David's the man they uphold, they lift up, they magnify his name as being glorious, and they remember that past of King David. And so he didn't just go in there and pick out any shield, any spear, right? He went to the treasury or to the storage house, and he got David's stuff. This is important. And he set, verse 10, he set all the people as guard for the king, every man with his weapon in his hand. Let's go on down there. Verse 11, then they brought out the king's son and put the crown on him and gave him testimony. And they proclaimed him king, and Jehoiada and his sons anointed him. And they said, "Long live the king." Now, you're doing this in Athaliah's backyard, aren't you? Athaliah catches wind of this. What happens to her? I don't know if I have these up there. Let's go to verse 12, 2 Chronicles 23, 12. When Athaliah heard the noise of the people running and praising the king, she went into the house of the Lord to the people. And when she looked, there was the king standing by his pillar at the entrance, and the captains and trumpeters beside the king, and all the people of the land rejoicing, blowing trumpets, and the singers with their musical instruments leading in the celebration. Athaliah tore her clothes and cried, "Treason! Treason!" And not one person listened to her. The real treason had been committed 7 years ago. And she was truly the one who had been treacherous in her dealings. And so her whole world is tumbling before her. If you go on down, Jehoiada tells the captains to bring her out between the ranks, anyone who follows her to be put to death with a sword. No one followed her. Not one devoted person died for her. That's recorded, at least. The priest then says, do not kill her in the temple. So verse 15, they laid hands on her, and she went into the entrance of the horse gate of the king's house, and they put her to death there. And so ends the reign of Athaliah. Comes in with a bang and goes out with a whisper. And that's kind of the way her time as queen ends. After that, Jehoiada makes a covenant between himself and all the people and the king that they should be the Lord's people. Now, Judah had ventured far from God. You think about the men and the kings that had followed Joash, had not been great since Jehoshaphat. You had Joram, who was not a good king, and then you had Ahaziah, who was not a good king, and then you had Athaliah. So Judah has been in this period of time where it had ventured far from God. Also during this time, what had happened in regard to religion in Judah? Baal worship. Now, Baal worship had been a real stumbling block for Israel because of Jezebel and Ahab. However, through the marriage covenants they had made with the kings of Judah, it not only had come into the land of Israel, but now had even ventured down into Judah. Now, Jehu, as we learned last week, had come in and done a good job at eliminating Baal worship in the north, but in the south it was still a problem. And so Jehoiada makes a covenant between God and the king and the people that they would serve God. Verse 17 says, then all the people went to the house of Baal and tore it down. His altars and his images, they broke in pieces, and they killed Matan, the priest of Baal, before the altars. Jehoiada posted watchmen for the house of the Lord under the direction of the Levitical priest and the Levites, whom David had organized to be in charge of the house of the Lord, to offer burnt offerings to the Lord, as is written in the law of Moses, rejoicing and with singing according to the order of David. And so they're able to, in some way, restore proper worship. Now, what we'll find out is it's not complete. Again, he falls short just as others have done in Judah. And when we think about Asa, when we think about Jehoshaphat, the same is true with Joash. Same was true with Jehu. So let's look at some things he did while king. I won't read all this, but we'll just kind of go through it. Some good things he did. Number one, we look at Baal worship. He was able to somewhat cleanse the land of that. He was also able, to bring some peace to Judah. If you go down here, and we'll go on down to verse 21. Verse 21, so all the people of the land rejoiced, and the city was quiet after Athaliah had been put to death with a sword. What is that term, quiet? What does that say to you?
What, peace and quiet?
Peace and quiet. Does it say something about what it's been like for the past 7 years, maybe longer, that there really hasn't been a very peaceful place, that Jerusalem has not been a very peaceful place to live. And so now Joash, really, Jehoiada has really been kind of the guy behind all this. I just want to remind you of that. Jehoiada has really been kind of the stir, or the, what is it, the straw that stirs the drink or whatever. He's kind of been the guy there that's been pushing this stuff through. If you go on, continue reading here, you go on into chapter 24. It says, Joash was 7 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 40 years. That's a good long reign, especially when you compare it to his father, right? 39 more than his father reigned. Some of that was good. His mother was Zebiah of Beersheba. Joash did what was right in the eyes of the Lord all the days of, notice that again, all the days of Jehoiada the priest. Doesn't say all the days of Joash, all the days of Jehoiada. He did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. Jehoiada got for him two wives, and he had two sons and daughters. And so he begins to replenish the family of David that had been wiped out by his grandmother. And so if you continue reading, or actually if we go back to where we are. So let's talk about it for a minute. You probably, maybe all of us need a refresher here. So if I stand here, can everybody see? So let's go, whoops, wrong button there, Brian. All right, so again, we notice at the top of our chart, we have King Saul. Eventually, of course, David became king, and then we follow the line of David's family here. All right, so we've seen the reign of Solomon, of Rehoboam, and then Bajiah, Asa, Jehoshaphat, Joram, and his wife Athaliah, his son Ahaziah. Joash is where we are here. Now, that's a different spelling of Jehoash or Joash here. And this is where we are. At the same time, during the time the kingdom split, of course, you have Rehoboam in Judah, and you have Jeroboam here in the north. Nadab, his son, reigned, and Baasha reigned for a short period. Then the kingdom was taken away, given to Elam, Zimri, and Omri. And then Omri's son Ahab married a woman named Jezebel. They had two sons. They had Ahaziah and then Jehoram. And now the kingdom has been taken away again and given to another man named Jehu. And that's where we are in the north. So you got Jehu reigning at the same time as Joash. That's kind of where we are. Any questions about that up to where we are? Be good to keep going back to that. I know it might be hard, but if you memorize this chart, if you just learn that, attach that into your brain, it will help you so much with the historical references of the Old Testament up until the captivity. So, as you can see, as we're moving along quickly, and we will go through these kingdoms very quickly, we're getting close to the end of the divided kingdom, and we'll move into the captivity period very shortly. Any questions? All right, well, let's go back. Again, here, you know, when you think about the kingdom of Joash as he reigned, It's kind of a mixed bag. Again, the period with Jehoiada as high priest is a good period for much of Judah. After Jehoiada's death, things begin to change. So if we go back to 2 Kings 12, again, I'm sorry, I'm going to kind of go back and forth a little bit. just to get a full context between 2 Kings 12 and 2 Chronicles. But if we go back to 2 Kings for just a moment, Jehoash, remember, don't get that confused. That's the same thing as Joash, just a different spelling. It's talking about the same guy. Jehoash did what was right in the eyes of the Lord all the days, all his days, because of Jehoiada. Now, if you remember, 2 Chronicles phrases that a little bit differently, maybe a little bit clearer. He did what was right in the eyes of God all the days of Jehoiada, the high priest. Nevertheless, though, now, so when the Bible gives that kind of blanket statement that he did what was right in the eyes of God, does he mean that he was perfect? No. And then we've seen this over and over again. It's not a blanket statement saying that everything he did was great, but he did some good things. I almost tend to think of it as he did more good than bad, almost. But there's still some negative things. One thing that it notes in verse 3 is that the high places, now what is that? The high places, whenever you hear that. What? Okay, so it could be a reference to the golden calves. There were also other places that were on high mounts that were reserved for idolatry. But if you'll just put those two things together, high places is a reference to idolatry. There was still idolatry going on. It wasn't Baal worship. But what were the other gods that we know were there? The Ashtaroth and Ashtaroth. What? Chemoth, I can't remember how to say it exactly, but yeah. So there were still other idolatries, forms of idolatry in Judah, but the Baal worship had been dealt with, at least. If you continue reading, Jehoash said to the priest, so we see this as kind of almost like a cycle. When Israel is doing, or Judah is doing what is good, God blesses them. And one of kind of the symbols of God's blessing be on them was the condition of the temple. When they were doing right, where did they put their focus? On the temple. When they weren't doing what they were supposed to, they forgot about the temple and they allowed it to be harmed or left untended to. And so the temple almost, the condition or the health of the temple almost is kind of like a symptom of the spiritual problem they have going on. So it's kind of like with us. Take prayer. Your prayer life, my prayer life, is a symptom of the condition of my spiritual well-being. When I am more focused on my spiritual well-being, my prayer life's going to be better. I'm going to think more about prayer. I'm going to make it more a part of my life. When my spiritual condition's not real good, maybe I don't pray as much. Because I'm more focused over here than I am up there. And so the temple is kind of like that. So now the spiritual condition is improving in Judah. So what does Joash do? Well, he looks at the temple. Ooh, temple not looking so great. It's not in great condition. And so he devises a plan to improve it. Well, what do you need to do if you want to make renovations to your home?
Spend money.
You're going to spend some money, right? You have to open up that wallet. And so they need an inflow of cash. So when it comes to giving in regard to the temple, where did those funds generally go to? When the Jews would come in to worship and they would give as a part of their offering, where would it go? To the priest. The priest, that's how they earned a living. Remember, the priests were not given any property in the promised land. And the way they were provided for through the law of Moses was through the giving. Well, they can't take money from that. That's the way God established it. But there was a way for people to give in regard to the temple. And that's what he's going to get into. So he said, verse 4, all the money of the holy things that is brought into the house of the Lord, the money for which each man is assessed, the assessment of the person, and the money that a man's heart prompts him to bring into the house of the Lord, let the priest take, each from his donor, and let them repair the house wherever any need of repairs is discovered. So that's his plan. It sounds good, right? But what happens? Well, they don't do that. And it's because that money was set aside for the priest. And so he asked Jehoiada, verse 6, why are you not... He sees what's going on. He calls Jehoiada in. So that's not going to work. They can't raise the money that way. So they need to raise it a different way. Well, verse 6, Joash brings something up to Jehoiada. He says, why have you not required the Levites to bring in from Judah and Jerusalem the tax levied by Moses, the servant of the Lord, in the congregation of Israel for the tent of testimony? Now, verse 7 tells us what's happened is that the sons of Athaliah, the wicked sons, had broken in and had done a great harm to the temple. And that Athaliah had not done anything about it and left it in this condition. And so he brings up this tax. Do you know what he's talking about? You ever heard of the temple tax? Exodus chapter 30, I won't read all this, so I'll let you go back. But if you go to Exodus chapter 30, beginning at verse 11, the law of Moses allowed for a temple tax to be levied on those who would come in to visit. And I wonder if this is not the same box that we find Jesus looking at when he's watching people come in and give to the temple. I don't know if it's the same kind of deal or not. But he's watching people come in and give. And remember, it's the woman with the two mites who gave the most. Well, Joash decides, you know what we need to do is I'm going to put a box in there. We have a box, don't we? You put your contribution in. He says, we're going to put a hole on top of that box and people can come in and give. What they find is what? That box gets full. And it fills up. And it's filling up so quick, they're having to come in and make sure they dump it out. Right? Because they are collecting all these. What's God doing? God is providentially blessing the people. But I thought this is the people blessing God. How is it God blessing the people? I remember my brother several years ago saying a prayer, and it's always stuck with me, and I think this is a good way to pray. He asked God, God bless me that I can bless the church greater. God, I pray for your blessings on me so that I can give that back. You know, that kind of heart or mindset that we should have to want to give back. And that's what's going on here. I'm out of time, sorry. We'll pick back up here. We'll finish out looking at the life of Joash and move on into what's going on in the north. We've got to go back up north and see what's going on up there. Thank you so much. Be dismissed, and we'll reassemble in just a few minutes for our devotional time.